I want to tell you a story this morning, actually a series of stories. Many of you, I believe, will already know some or maybe all of them. First story is about a man with a past. He had a past that he ran away from. He was raised in the lap of luxury, but through a poor decision had to run away from his home country and live in the wilderness for 40 years. This man was Moses. He was a prince of Egypt. He knew his past. He knew he was a Hebrew raised in the Egyptian court. And when he tried to rectify what he saw as an injustice, as the Egyptian slave master was beating a Hebrew, well, he acted just a little bit impulsively. He killed the Egyptian and as a result had to flee for his life. And for the next 40 years, God trained him to be the leader he needed. Again, he knew the history of his people, but they had no idea who God was. They knew that God appeared to their ancestors. He was probably wondering which God, because he'd been raised in Egypt. I wonder if this is this Amun-Ra, maybe Osiris, one of the good gods apparently, if he cares about slaves. When Moses finally met God, when God finally revealed himself, he showed himself, I am not one of those false Egyptian gods. He said, Moses, I have a task for you. You're going to go to Egypt and you're going to tell Pharaoh to let my people go. And Moses said, Lord, you can't send me. I mean, why would the Hebrews listen to me? And on top of that, I'm going to tell them that I saw a fire coming out of a bush that told me to come. And they're going to ask me, which God was that? And God said, I am. He gave Moses his name, Yahweh, which means I am. And for the first time, a human being knew the name of God. Moses was called by God. I wonder this morning, are you Moses? Do you know some of the stories? Do you know some of the history? But do you not know the God of those stories? Do you not know who this God is? Are you receiving for the first time the call that that God puts on your heart? A call to know him and to accomplish the great purposes that he has for you. I want to tell you another story. A story that many of y'all probably already know. It's the story of Jonah. Jonah was commanded by God to go to the great city of Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, the empire that had wiped out the greater portion of the nation of Israel. And God said, you go there and you prophesy against them so that they may be saved from the wrath I have in store for them. But Jonah didn't really want to go there. You might think he probably didn't want to go there because, well, it's Nineveh. That's a scary place to go. But later on, when he gets upset with God, he lets it slip why he didn't want to go. He said, I know that you're a forgiving God, so there. If I go preach to these people, there's a chance, even though they're the most evil people in the world, there's a chance that they'll accept it and you'll forgive them. And I want them to burn. And I want to watch. So Jonah, before he had that opportunity to watch, hopped on a boat going the opposite direction from Nineveh. We kind of know the story. Big storm came. You know, the sailors did everything they could to save the ship. But afterwards, they did what they could do. They grabbed Jonah, and Jonah said, hey, it's all because of me. And they threw him overboard, and everything got better. And Jonah got swallowed by a fish, which happens all the time, and then got spat up back on the shore. And I would argue under duress if I had spent 3 days in the belly of a fish and got harfed back up on the shore, to put it bluntly, on the shore, I would not be inclined to repeat the same mistake. I wonder this morning, are you Jonah? Like Jonah, do you know God? You maybe have an inkling or maybe a certainty for what he wants you to do. And yet, for whatever reason, you've decided that right now is not a good time. You ever get asked what I call embarrassing questions? And I don't mean embarrassing based on the content, not like personal questions, but questions where you have to give an answer that you don't want to give. Give an example. My lawn mowing is determined not by the needs of my lawn, but by my schedule. So I mow every Tuesday. And if it rains on Tuesday, my guess, I'm going to wait a little while. And one week in the summer, when it was actually raining, one of those rare times it was raining, you know, grass needs to be mowed more than once a week anyway. And it had been 9 or 10 days since I'd mowed. And one of my neighbors asked me when I was out coming in, I rolled down the window and talked to my neighbors every now and then and from my car. And they asked, hey, Mike, did your lawnmower break? That was an embarrassing question. Because the answer to that question is, no, I just haven't mowed. Not that I couldn't mow, I just haven't done it. I know what I need to do. And I know that you can't see my windows because of the grass. But I just haven't done it. That's an embarrassing question. If you got asked some of those questions about your spiritual life, would it be an embarrassing question? If you were asked, you know, why haven't you been in church lately? Hey, how often do you read your Bible? Hey, what do you do in the church? Would that be an embarrassing question? I think for all of us at times, it would be. I want to tell you a story you may already know, about a man named, Peter. Peter was one of the most fervent followers of Christ. In fact, when Christ was arrested, he was the only one willing to resist with force. But Christ, of course, corrected him. Told him that is not the way his kingdom would be run. That night, after he was arrested, Peter followed at a safe distance. When he was asked 3 times if he was a follower of Christ, he said no all 3 times. The first time he said no. The second time he took an oath and said no. The third time he cursed and took an oath and said no, just as Jesus predicted that he would. And when the rooster crowed, he realized what he had done, and he wept bitterly all night. The difference between Peter and Judas is not which one betrayed Christ that night. Both did. The difference is that Peter came back. Judas couldn't handle what he did, and he killed himself. Peter came back and asked Christ for forgiveness. And as such, Peter became the first evangelist after Christ ascended into heaven. I wonder this morning, are you Peter? Have you maybe known about God for a while and let it lapse? Maybe you've been a Jonah for a while, but you've come back. You've come back with that fervent love for God, and you want to put that into practice somehow. Think, God, I'm ready for whatever you throw at me. I know I've messed up, but Lord, I want you to correct me, fix me, repair me, and use me. That reminds me of another story. A story you may already know about a man named Paul. Paul was not a good man to begin with. In fact, he persecuted Christians before he met Christ on the road to Damascus. But afterwards, wow, what a change. Or you could say, not really much of a change, but what a redirection. Because he was as zealous in spreading the gospel as he was at persecuting Christians beforehand. And he was shipwrecked, he was beaten, he was mocked, he was stoned. Even within the church, there were a lot of people that didn't much care for him, because it's hard to accept as an ally someone who was once a bitter enemy. But Paul, in his letter to the Philippians, right before the passage we just read, in fact, said, everything that I had beforehand that I valued, my privilege as one of the few non-Jew Israelites left, he's from the tribe of Benjamin, not from the tribe of Judah, my training as a Pharisee, my zealousness for the law, my Roman citizenship, all of it, everything I had, and I had a lot going for me, is rubbish compared to what I have in Christ. I wonder this morning, are you Paul? Are you on fire? Are you just a burning fire for God? Are there not enough hours in the day to do what you want to do for His kingdom? Do you have just a passion that the only problem is finding enough areas to focus it in. Are you burning with that love of God? I want to tell you one more story. A story you probably already know from the third chapter of Daniel. Story of Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. Traditionally, they're referred to as the three Jews. In the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, it's the empire that succeeded the Assyrians, he set up a golden statue and demanded that everyone in his empire worship it. The three Jews refused. So Nebuchadnezzar told them, if you do not bow down to this idol, I'm going to throw you into a furnace. They still refused. He heated up the furnace 7 times its normal heat, gave them one last chance, and what they said to him was, our God can save us. But if he doesn't, even if he doesn't, you, O king, will know that we will not worship your gods or bow down to your idols. I wonder today, do you feel like one of the three Jews? When we light a fire, like when you're grilling out, you light a fire, pour down your lighter fluid, just a tidbit, a tip. If anybody has never done this before, don't squirt it while it's on fire. I've lost eyebrows and most of a beard doing that. In fact, the roughest part of my marriage occurred with that because my beard got so short that I had to shave it off and she saw my face. But after a while, that fire dies down, doesn't it? And you have hot coals. You don't see the flame, but those coals are hot. They're hotter than that fire ever was. And there comes moments where the flame dies down, but the heat is still there. Maybe we don't have the visible signs of being on fire like we did before because we're in survival mode, like those three Jews. Literally, their lives were on the line. They were in a foreign empire that was very hostile to the message of God. And they had to rely on God just for their very survival. Do you feel that way? Wherever you are right now in life, you feel like maybe you've had great service to God in the past. But right now, things are just rough. And you're clinging on to Him for your very survival. Let's face it, bad things happen in lives. We lose loved ones. We lose jobs. We lose relationships. Life is full of a lot of junk. And sometimes it's fun, at least for me, you may think I'm a geek because of this, but sometimes it's fun to just pore over theology. Sometimes it's fun to come up with all these creative things to do in church. Other times, you whip open that Bible, you think, I just need to be in this word and with you, God, to get through today. Wherever you are today, do you feel like that? My suspicion is that one of these five characters fits all of us where we are today. Because they aren't really five stories, but they flow together as one. They don't necessarily go in order either, but they're one story. And you could tell it that way, couldn't you? God appeared to Moses and gave him his call, but Jonah didn't want to hear it. So he ran away from God. But after he had denied Christ, Peter came back. And he and Paul were the most dynamic leaders in the early church. But at times, they faced shipwreck, beating, mockery, stoning. As Paul said in Philippians 4, I've learned to go without because I can do all things through Christ. And the glory of that is that sometimes we start over again then. When we're down at that low point, like the three Jews, it's easier to remember our first love. Easier to remember that first calling. Can you remember that? The very first time you experience the presence of God. Sometimes it becomes so regular. I don't know where you are right now. But one of those stories fits. You may have not heard God before. You may be walking away from Him. You may have turned back to Him recently and need a place to work. You may be on fire to the point where you're at, even already ready to burn out. And you need to smolder as a coal in the presence of God. Return to your first love and start again. Let me give you an illustration of how this works. Arguably the most important naval battle in World War II was the Battle of Midway. You could even make a good case, I think, that it was the most important naval battle in history. It occurred almost 6 months to the day after Pearl Harbor, and in the meantime, the Japanese had been everywhere victorious. They had destroyed every capital ship deployed against them. They had conquered vast tracts of China. And they did it mainly through their naval air force. In the Zero, they had the best shipborne fighter in the world. And their bomber crews were top-notch. In fact, there was no crew, no plane that could compete with the Zero in the air. Four carriers went to Midway. The Americans had only three there. Moreover, each Japanese carrier had more planes. These were extreme odds. The only ace in the hole they had was Midway itself, which had land-based aircraft. The battle functioned just as they expected. Bombers from Midway took off. They attacked the Japanese fleet. They missed the Japanese fleet. Most were shot down. One oiler was damaged. The Japanese launched their attack on Midway Island, shot down two-thirds of the fighters because they could not compete with the Zeros, heavily bombed the island, and returned to their carriers without suffering a single loss. At that point in time, Midway's aircraft struck back, missed again, but it was enough to encourage the Japanese Admiral Nagumo to change course, to try and throw him off the trail. So when the American carriers launched their aircraft, most of the dive bombers missed, totally confused by the change of course. 150 aircraft still made contact with the Japanese fleet, but they were shot down and massacred like the others by the Zeros. At this point in time, the Japanese Admiral thought to himself that the Americans have enough strength for one more attack, and then they'll be disarmed. And he was right. Torpedo bombers from the Yorktown made contact with the Japanese fleet. Torpedo bombers have to fly low along the surface to launch their torpedoes. Of the 12 that attacked, none found a mark. And predictably, the Zeros descended, shot down 7 of the 12. And then, in the sky, there appeared a group of 37 American dive bombers. They had totally missed the fleet beforehand, confused by its change of direction. They had lost contact with their own headquarters. And by sheer dumb luck and shrewd guesswork, they made contact with the Japanese fleet again. And as they began their attack, the Zeros, which had destroyed every other American formation, were down at sea level, having fought off the torpedo bombers. And in the words of John Keegan, those 37 American bombers delivered the most stunning and devastating attack in the history of naval warfare. Within 5 minutes, three of the four Japanese carriers were destroyed, and the last one was destroyed as it tried to flee. The entire battle was turned around. For 2.5 hours, the Japanese had held the advantage, and in 5 minutes, they lost the battle. But the battle was not won by those dive bombers, was it? Even though they struck the decisive blow. If the Zeros had been at a higher altitude, they would have suffered the same fate as the others. It was the torpedo bombers that drew them down. But at the time, how do you think those torpedo bombers felt? After they attacked and missed and suffered heavy losses, they were probably thinking, this has been a total failure. not realizing that their intervention changed World War II. 12 pilots, through their sacrifice, changed World War II. We all know about spiritual gifts, and that's how the church functions, through our gifts. And in many ways, we function like the American fleet at the Battle of Midway. We don't know what God's big plan is. Think about those dive bombers for a minute. If Midway's aircraft had not attacked the fleet, it would not have changed direction. If it had not changed direction, they would not have missed. If they had not had missed and come back at the time the torpedo bombers were there, they would have missed that 5-minute window that they could have attacked. Pretty amazing stuff. Now, we don't know what God's plan is, but it functions kind of like that. There are those of us who are at a stage in life where we're on fire, where we're going to do great things for God. There are those of us who are like Peter. We're just coming back. We have no idea what God has in store for us. And there are those of us who are like the three Jews, just clinging on for survival. Let me close with encouragement and by throwing down a gauntlet. I want to encourage each of us with the knowledge that life can be rough. And when it is, there is no better place than the church to hold us up. And I would encourage you to find relationships here with one another. Let me throw down the gauntlet by asking, how would you respond to those embarrassing questions right now? And if those embarrassing questions would be embarrassing, let me encourage you to live in such a way and act in such a way that they would not be embarrassing, that you have good answers to the embarrassing questions. I'm amazed sometimes at the things I learn from simple spots. I maintain a blog I call Feline Theology about stuff I learn about God from my cats. Shouldn't be a surprise to any of y'all. I learned about God last summer through my lawn. But what's true in one aspect of life is often true in another. How would you answer the embarrassing question today? Say, I haven't read my Bible, but I don't do anything in my church, but even outside of church, I don't really do any sort of service for other people, but remember about a year ago, I was sharing with you something I'd read about weasels. And one of the types of weasels is the excuse-bearing weasels. And one of the most amazing things about excuse-bearing weasels is that the excuses always seem to check out. If someone is late to a meeting and they say their car was hit by a meteor, you can go to their house and see the crater. But taken together, I mean, how often does that really happen? Yeah, the individual excuses may check out, but how many people are always busy to the point where they can't do anything for other people? They can't do anything for God. Let me confess, a lot of my sermons come from convictions I've had that I just share with you. And I wasn't happy the last couple of weeks with how would I answer the embarrassing questions. They would be, frankly, embarrassing. That's the definition of it. Thank you. I would encourage you today to make a decision to live in such a way that the embarrassing questions will not be embarrassing. And there's one thing that we can start right now. That is, if you are in the place of Moses, if you are receiving that call from God, no better time than the present to respond to it. If so, the invitation is from God, from Christ, not from Mike, not from Smyrna Christian, to come forward and accept his son through baptism. We can do all things through God who strengthens us, and it will be amazing what Smyrna Christian Church can do through Christ.